I'm Wendy Ring.
And I'm Brian Curtis.
And this is Cool Solutions, a show about people protecting our climate from the bottom up, with stories about climate solutions that work where we live.
Each month, we'll introduce you to a powerful climate solution and take you to where it's happening. Our webpage will have information you can use to bring this solution home to your family and community. Let's get cool.
It was Tuesday or a Wednesday, and we had a meat item. The student was wondering why that item wasn't served on a Monday. Another student had asked that question, and he goes, well, of course it's not going to serve on a Monday. Don't you know that that's when animals get the day off?
That's Miguel Villarreal, Food Service and Nutrition Director at Novato Unified School District, where a conscious decision to serve less meat and more vegetables not only cut greenhouse gas emissions, but also rates of child obesity. Many are following in their footsteps. Whether it's Meatless Monday or Lean and Green Wednesday, there are now more than 60 U.S. school districts serving weekly plant-based meals.
Today, we'll be talking with food service directors from two California school districts and hearing from nutritional and environmental experts about ways to eat healthy for ourselves and the planet. We're starting our journey in Healdsburg, California, a small town located about 70 miles north of San Francisco. In terms of health and nutrition, Healdsburg Unified School District's 1,600 students are pretty similar to our kids here in Humboldt County. More than 70% of the student body eats fast food at least once a week, a quarter of their fifth graders are overweight, and more than one quarter are obese and at risk of developing diseases like diabetes, hypertension, and fatty liver before they even graduate from high school.
These days, childhood obesity is as American as apple pie. It can happen to anyone, but children from low-income families are twice as likely to be overweight.
And these are the same kids who qualify for free and reduced-cost lunches. For Rosa Rodriguez, Food Services Director for the Healdsburg District, that was a recipe for change.
I was approached by Christy Middleton from the Humane Society about cutting meat one day of the week and how it's healthier for our planet and for our students. And she sold us with the idea right away.
Healdsburg is part of a bigger movement stretching from Florida to Hawaii. Participants include rural and suburban districts in California, the Southeast, and the Midwest, as well as big districts in major cities like Baltimore, Boston, Detroit, Houston, Kansas City, New York, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles.
We added Meatless Mondays, and then at the same time, we threw salad bars into all our cafeterias at all our schools. We figured out on how to trickle it down at all our grade levels. For example, our elementary sites, we would have like bean and cheese burritos, grilled cheese lasagna, cheese enchiladas. If I were to do an Asian garbanzo bean noodle bowl, our elementary students would not eat it versus our junior high and high school. They're more experimental.
Local farmers pitch in to help Healdsburg kids learn to eat their veggies. This is Angie Corwin-Lasky from the California Alliance with Family Farmers.
The Harvest of the Month program is an interactive educational tasting kit program. We purchase produce from local farmers, we package it together with educational materials, and we deliver it around to classrooms around Sonoma County. The whole goal is introducing kids to new fruits and vegetables. By bringing fresh produce into the classroom in an educational setting, students then interact with this produce with less baggage around it. We're not trying to get kids to eat meals like their parents are at home. They're just getting to experience new produce in a classroom setting. So even if the child is unwilling to try the produce, they still get to touch it, they get to smell it, they get to watch their peers do the same thing. And what we found is that most students who start out as nervous for trying new fruits and vegetables will actually end up trying these produce items. And a lot of the students end up liking pretty much all of the produce items. It's really exciting to see. We have a couple stories where a student comes into the classroom and turns their nose up. Oh, it's orange, it's slimy, it's whatever, it's green. I don't eat green. And by the time the Harvest of the Month lesson is over, they're eating the produce item and asking for seconds.
Together, the food service staff, teachers, and farmers are making an impact.
We had an excess of eggplant a couple months ago, and we have a vegetarian student who eats in our cafeteria every day, and the staff at that site made little mini eggplant pizzas, and we offer them to students, and our vegetarian little girl was a little thrown off by it. All our other students who do like to eat meat, they were the ones that were most excited about the little eggplant pizzas. And it went over so well, it was really popular that they asked for it on a frequent basis.
For Miguel Villarreal, the move away from meat came as part of a total reevaluation of school food.
I'm originally from Texas and had worked in school food service in Texas. And when I moved to California, I just expected an entirely different mindset, if you will. And what I found was the exact same type of food that was being served in Texas. For me, it was an epiphany that I had at that moment. I'm out here in California. This shouldn't be happening. And so I personally just started re-educating myself on the food system. And the more I learned about the food system, animals that were being raised in these confined animal feeding operations, and the amount of antibiotics that were being used in these animals, and the amounts of hormones that were being used, and the impact not only our health, but the health and the environment, I said, oh my gosh, I'm back to what I just left. There's no way I'm going to do what I did the first 20 years because that didn't work. So I went back to the people who hired me and I said, look, we have to change the system. We've been going down this path, and this path is leading to diabetes, obesity, heart condition. It's not a path that we want to take. I know of another path. I need your support.
Novato is a K-12 district in the North Bay region of the San Francisco Bay. It serves around 3,500 meals a day.
There was a lot of questions early on about, you know, hey, why aren't we getting any meat on Monday? Even my staff would say, Miguel, we checked all the surrounding school districts in our area and around California. Nobody's doing Meatless Monday. We're the only ones, and the kids don't like it. And, you know, all these reasons as to why we shouldn't do that. And I personally am a very patient man, and I also believe in education. So I say to my staff, we just have to continue educating. We have to continue making sure that these students and these parents and the community in general understand why we're doing what we're doing. And so that's come full circle. And today we've got the support of our entire community, from the school board to our administrators, our teachers, our parents, our farmers. It's an experience that I didn't get to see for the first 20 years working in school food services, but I look forward to coming to work every day because I know there's people that want to do the best for these children in this community. Now, we've got districts around the entire state that have taken the lead, large school districts, San Diego, Los Angeles, Oakland, and then, of course, many, many other smaller school districts that are now offering Meatless Monday. So I like to say that because we were doing no red meat since 2008, that we were cool before Meatless Monday was cool.
School administrators and food service directors considering meatless meals, the two big questions are, how much will it cost and will the kids eat it? The two are inextricably intertwined. Instead of handing kids a tray with everything blopped on it like they did when I was a kid, many schools participate in a program called Offer Versus Serve, which lets students pick what goes on their plates. This reduces food waste, but can cost districts money because the feds only pay for a student's lunch if he or she selects certain elements, including 1/2 cup of fruit or vegetables. When that 1/2 cup of veggies is incorporated into a meatless entree, the school gets reimbursed for the meal, and kids who also choose the side serving of fruit or vegetables get double the nutritional benefit. Decreasing meat and dairy in school meals can actually be a money saver. When the Oakland Unified School District cut its meat and dairy purchases 30%, they saved enough by substituting lower-cost legumes and vegetables to switch what red meat they do buy to grass-fed organic and still spend 1% less per meal.
Some parents may worry whether their growing child gets enough protein from a meatless meal.
We actually eat about 1.5 times more protein than we need.
This is Becky Ramsing, registered dietitian and public health specialist at Johns Hopkins Center for a Livable Future.
A healthy serving of meat is actually pretty small. It's only about 2 to 3 ounces, so it's like the size of a deck of cards or the palm of your hand. And additionally, it's often thought that meat is necessary for health. But in fact, plant-based proteins provide adequate high-quality protein. The way our American diet is, most of the protein we eat is laid in the second part of the day at lunch and especially dinner. But in fact, our body uses protein most efficiently when we spread it out throughout the day. So having a little bit of protein at breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and only having about 20 to 25 grams at a time. So a giant steak or a big protein shake, like we think is so important, actually has very limited effectiveness. But another way to look at protein is you do have it, you don't need large portions.
Eating too much meat, especially red meat, beef and lamb, takes a toll on our health. In 2014, a panel of nationally recognized experts was convened by the Department of Health and Human Services and the USDA to propose revisions to the federal nutritional guidelines, which determine the content of everything from school lunches to programs for pregnant women and senior citizens. These experts reviewed hundreds of studies and found links between diets high in red meat and obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. Two large studies, including more than 100,000 U.S. doctors and nurses and 500,000 senior citizens, found that substituting one serving per day of healthier foods for red meat decreased participants' chances of heart disease, diabetes, cancer, and premature death.
On school days, children eat up to half their daily calories at school. That makes schools a great place to start addressing the underlying causes of these diseases. Gatha Bergen, a policy specialist in NRDC's Food and Agriculture Program.
A burger starts as fertilizer and pesticides manufactured in a factory somewhere, using a lot of energy and a lot of fossil fuels. And those pesticides and fertilizer are applied in copious amounts to fields across the United States that grow corn and soy for feed, then transported to feedlots where it's fed to cows that then digest huge volumes of the stuff. And as they digest it, they produce methane through their digestive systems. It comes out either in burps or through farts. And then they also produce manure, which is spread on fields and can emit nitrous oxides, which are another greenhouse gas. You've got a triple whammy of greenhouse gas emissions. The fossil fuels used to grow the feed, the digestive systems of the cows, and then the manure.
Methane and nitrogen oxides are a big deal because over a 20-year period, methane is 80 times and nitrogen oxides 260 times more powerful at warming the planet than carbon dioxide. That's why the world's livestock cause more global warming than cars, buses, trains, and planes combined, and why an unchecked global trend toward increased meat consumption will put our climate over the 2-degree centigrade guardrail by the time today's school kids reach middle age.
What about grass-fed beef?
There's a lot of debate around whether feeding beef on grass alone can reduce climate impact. I would say the jury's still out. There are some that argue that grass-feeding beef allows you to sequester more carbon in the pasture land, and that offsets the increased lifespan that cows that are grass-fed have. It takes them longer to gain weight. But others believe that the sequestration benefits on average from grass-fed don't actually make up for the adverse climate impacts. Oxford University researchers just looked at 100 papers on this topic and came to the conclusion that there really isn't sufficient evidence to support the idea that grass-fed beef is an effective way to reduce the carbon impacts of the product. So they come to the conclusion that the best way to reduce emissions from your diet is to just cut the red meat in your diet rather than switch to the type of beef that you eat.
What if the beef is produced locally?
Transportation only amounts to about 4% of food-related emissions. These tailpipe emissions pale in comparison to what comes from the front and back ends of cows.
If every American cut out the equivalent of a burger from their diet each week, it would be like taking 10 million cars off the road.
Switching to one meatless, cheeseless day per week saves more climate pollution than eating 100% local for an entire year. I was surprised by the wide range of climate pollution from different animal-based foods. In graph form, it's quite dramatic. And I've been trying to figure out how to give listeners a mental picture. Try this. Imagine you are standing at the top of the Empire State Building, the 103rd floor. That's lamb, as high as it gets. Get on the elevator.
Going down.
And go down to the 70th floor. That's beef. Still at skyscraper level. Descend into the high-rise zone. Cheese is on the 35th floor. White meat, pork and poultry, is down on the 26th. Then drop all the way to the 5th floor for down-to-earth plant proteins like nuts, beans, and soy.
So no matter where you eat on the food chain, unless you're already a vegan, there's room to step down. And it's surprising how much we'd gain from some simple actions.
If you go from an average diet that includes an average consumption of red meat to just cutting out the red meat in your diet by keeping all your other meat consumption constant, you cut out about a quarter of your emissions right off the bat.
That's impressively close to the 30% reduction you'd achieve by becoming a complete vegetarian. You may wonder how much your individual food choices can impact a big problem like climate change. The answer is a lot.
It's a rare good news story in the realm of carbon emissions. Between 2005 and 2014, Americans cut the climate pollution associated with their diets by about 10%. And this was largely driven by a cut in beef consumption. So in this time period, Americans consumed 19% less beef. And that translated into removing about 39 million cars from the roads.
Becky Ramsing, our nutrition expert, reminds us that there are healthier options than switching from one kind of meat to another.
If I substitute white meat, or like chicken or poultry or turkey, for red meat, the risks are lowered. But the people who eat a more plant-based diet and have more vegetables and whole grains and beans actually have lower weights and lower risk, even more so than people who have animal protein.
For us visual learners, the Harvard School of Public Health created a graphic to show what a healthy plate should look like. Half is filled with fruits and vegetables, one quarter with healthy protein like fish, poultry, beans, and nuts, and one quarter with whole grain.
So sometimes there might be meat on the plate, but other times it could be plant protein. There's a name for people who eat like this, flexitarians.
This is a great meal pattern for people like me who don't like to be told, even by ourselves, what to do. I confess that producing this episode had the unfortunate side effect of temporarily increasing my desire to eat meat. I don't eat much to start, but for example, when I read that the average American eats 3 burgers a week, my initial reaction was, someone's eating my burgers. I better go out and get one so they don't eat it.
So you're saying instead of having a meatless day, it would be like very quietly and undogmatically not eating meat most of the week, and then having one or two meat days instead.
Right, and then because I was supposed to eat meat on meat day, I'd probably be contrarian and eat tofu instead.
And speaking of tofu, Miguel and Rosa agree that you can't serve something to kids just because it's healthy or because you like it.
One essential ingredient is student involvement.
The kids have to be engaged in the process, and so what we do is a sampling at the schools, and every time that we've done that, it's proven successful because the kids are, again, engaged in the process, and someone's talking to them about the benefits of it, encourage them to take it and taste it. We do it as a community, and we get all the students involved. That usually even helps even more because you've got the kids talking about, oh, my God, this is really good, and you get the other kids also seeing the experiences of these other children, so they want to try it as well. So anyway, we've been very successful in doing that. It takes a lot of effort, but it pays off.
For Rosa, the process of developing appealing lunch menus starts at home.
I have 3 children, age ranges 13 to 4, so they're kind of like my guinea pigs. So I search up a recipe, and then I will make it for my family, and then they will tell me the yay or nay or what to change or what to do, and then we try it on our students. And then I sit with the leadership team, which is a group of students at each of our sites, and we brainstorm ideas, and we talk about what it's a go and what's not a go, and I get the inside scoop of what I think is a popular entree. I hear it from the students, well, really, it's not really that popular. Maybe you should do this. And they give suggestions, and it just becomes this big collaboration and coming up with a favorite menu item.
Really, an effective school program should include the whole school community.
Our school district's been talking about equity for a long time. So when you look at it from an equity lens, you're looking at everybody across the board. We have families that are living below the poverty level. Those are the kids, the families that qualify. And then we have families that are living above the poverty level, but far below the cost of living standards for this area. And so those families that are caught in the middle are not participating in the program because they can't afford the school lunch. This past year, we started a program because we're really proud of our salad bars. I've been buying from local farms for many years now. So we've started a program where for $1, any child can eat from the salad bar. They can have all the same vegetables that these other kids have. It's been very popular. We also opened that up to our teachers. I can't tell how many teachers we've had taking advantage of that program. And then teachers are talking to students during the lunch line. I've overheard teachers telling kids, oh my gosh, you should eat the carrots or the hummus. It's good for you. Make sure that you take the spinach as well. And so these are the kinds of things that really are going to help us in the long run because these teachers are mentors to these younger kids.
Some of the benefits of healthier lunches are already visible.
some of the coaches were saying to me, Miguel, our players are much leaner than they've ever been over the years. We're not seeing overweight kids in the schools or even on the team any longer.
Were these coaches really seeing a trend? I got curious and decided to investigate. Every year, California tests, among other things, the body composition of its 5th, 7th, and 9th graders. Looking only at the group of students who qualify for subsidized lunches, I found that from 2010 to 2016, obesity decreased 12 to 20% statewide, but in Nevada, obesity rates dropped 50 to 70%. One quarter of California's low-income students are still obese, but in Nevada, the percentage is now in the low teens. This is probably not entirely attributable to cutting out red meat. Chocolate milk also went out the window, and likely not even entirely due to school lunches, but it's powerful evidence that communities have the collective power to profoundly influence the health of their youth. The goal for people like Rosa and Miguel is to change not only what kids eat at school, but also what they and their families eat at home and what they feed their children when they become parents.
As parents, it really starts with us. And so these children, I think of them as future parents. We're teaching them how to eventually educate their own children, because that's really where it's going to matter the most. And certainly schools make a difference, and the work that we're doing makes a difference. But ultimately, it starts at home. And if parents haven't received that education or even understand half of what we've been talking about, how can they possibly educate their children?
It seems like David and Goliath, lunchroom ladies versus a multi-billion dollar industry that targets children to market unhealthy foods.
We have a generation that was educated by the media, and the media is educating them for the wrong reasons. I mean, it was all about keeping their economic interests alive, keeping their companies alive, versus trying to keep our students and our citizens alive and healthy.
In this epic cultural battle for the stomachs and futures of American children, school nutrition programs are discovering the power of connecting what Miguel calls the three C's: cafeteria, classroom, and community.
Kids are bringing home the lessons that they learn at school. Here's Rosa.
In our welcome back fairs, we are always there with a table and our display, and we get to talk to parents and have different assortment of stories of, my kid knows what kale is now and wants to do kale, but I don't know what to do with kale. And then we have other parents telling us that our student wanted to buy brown tortillas because we serve whole grain tortillas. This school year was the first year that we share a recipe with our parents, and it went over really well. To be real honest, I wasn't expecting all my copies to go. Halfway through, I was, oh my God, I need to find a coffee machine because the parents are actually taking this.
We actually hold a culinary cooking labs during the school day. These past 6 weeks, we've taught 3,000 students from kindergarten to eighth grade how to make homemade hummus. Many of our children have not been exposed to hummus. Not only are they making the hummus themselves, but then we're actually serving it on our salad bars. And so we now have more kids are taking hummus from the salad bar. And because they've done the training, they know how to make the hummus, they're going home. And this is parents telling me this. Said, Miguel, my child came home and could not wait to make hummus for our family.
What would you say to listeners who want to help their local schools adopt a more plant-based menu?
So what's needed? You have to get the community engaged, and you have to convince the school board, and you have to convince the administrators, the superintendent, and the curriculum people, and then the food service department that this is something that, as a community, we all aspire and we all want, and it's happening around other areas of the state, and so we want this in our community as well. And understanding that you don't have to do everything year one. You know, you just take one small step, and then you build on that, perfect that, you go to the next level, and you celebrate those accomplishments, and you let everybody know what you've done and how you did it, and then you move on to the next thing.
There are lots of resources available for schools and community members. The Chef Anne Foundation has a parent advocacy toolkit to help parents convince their school districts. They also provide support for school food services in the form of recipes, menus, promotional materials, and even funding and technical assistance.
Meatless Mondays has a K-12 implementation guide based on successful school programs and a meatless cookbook for school cafeterias. Forward Food, another Humane Society program, provides free trainings for school food service professionals. Find links to these resources on our Cool Solutions webpage, khsu.org/coolsolutions. Here's some advice from Sujatha Bergen on how to decrease meat in your own diet.
There are ways to eat more plant-forward and less climate-intensive and still maintain a delicious diet. So there's lots of ethnic cuisines that are lower in meat and higher in plants that folks could explore. You can use meat as a condiment rather than the main dish. So you can still have that flavor, but not necessarily have it be this big hunk of steak in the middle of your plate. There are also new innovative products coming on the market, like a mushroom blended burger, which replaces 30 to 50% of the beef in a burger with mushrooms. And according to taste tests, it tastes better than a typical burger. It's more moist, and you're getting half of the bad stuff in terms of health. So there's lots of cool ways to reduce the red meat you eat, and folks can have fun exploring this and be really satisfied as well.
That's cool.
Really cool.
It's so cool that if we all gave up red meat, we'd cut our carbon footprint 25%.
I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Ring. You've been listening to Cool Solutions, a show about people healing our climate from the bottom up.
Thank you so much to our guests today, Rosa Rubio,
Miguel Villarreal,
Angie Corwin-Lasky,
Becky Ramsing,
and Sujatha Bergen.
You'll find a recording of this show and links to resources about meatless meals at our webpage, khsu.org/coolsolutions. We'd love to get your feedback and your suggestions about cool solutions to feature in other episodes. Email Wendy at climate911.org.
Cool Solutions is produced in the studio of KHSU at Humboldt State University.